Welcome to the Being Forces Friendly podcast, which is all about partnering with defence. In this new season, we focus on personal stories of different members of the Armed Forces community to understand their unique experiences and hear more about their lives.
Welcome to the Being Forces Friendly podcast. My name is Tony Blaney, and I'm the Senior National Account Manager here at Defence Relationship Management. Today I have with me Helev Kendrick, who is the founder for Recruit for Spouses and also a military spouse herself. Helev, would you like to introduce yourself?
Good afternoon. It's really great to be on this podcast, Tony, and thank you for having me. I think really what I'd start with saying is that my name is Helev, as you just announced, it's a Welsh name, as we've just been discussing. And I am the founder of RFS, Recruit for Spouses. I founded Recruit for Spouses in 2011 when I first got married. I'd always worked. I'd never been without a job. At the time we were in Afghanistan, there was a lot of back-to-back tours. We had lots of people, as you know, it was a very difficult time for the British Armed Forces. I had two young children, and I remember going out to get a little job with a local, I think it was down here, in a recruitment agency, and I registered. And the first thing he said to me was, "You're never going to get a job with that address," because we lived at the time in Pirbright. And I remember thinking, that was really strange. So I got back to the base, having a coffee morning, and I had two tiny ones with me, and I said to the other spouses, that was a bit weird. I said, "Oh gosh, don't go there. Don't ever go to a recruitment agency. You'll never get a job as a military spouse." And I thought, that was a bit strange. And the more spouses I spoke to on my patch, the more were saying at that point, "Look, give up your career." And they were doctors, they were surgeons, they'd all had a career, they were midwives. And I had nothing better to do really, so I thought I would research it for 2 years when the children were little. So that's how it kind of started.
Oh wow, and that was back in 2011?
Well actually, probably 2009, 2010.
Okay, oh wow. So it's interesting you say about your experience there in the recruitment agent. Would you say that's widely true of anyone who lives on inside the wire?
So when I started researching, I thought that it was just a problem on this one patch. Mm-hmm. But the more it was a day, as you can imagine, Tony, before internet really got out. So I was, there was Facebook, but it was very, very sort of very basic at the time. And I just started talking to other spouses and they were coming in. And as you know, we move every 2 years. There's a lot of mobility throughout the UK, but also internationally throughout the world. And the more spouses I spoke to, not just on the patch, the more I realised it was a problem. And it wasn't just a problem with the moves and the relocations, but it was actually a problem with the bias that was towards the armed forces community and on a sort of national level. So they all the employers thought at the time, wherever that they were, well, you're going to move on in a year. So what's the point in employing you in my school or anywhere locally if you're going to move on? And then I would meet the odd employer would say, "Oh my God, they're brilliant, they're great." And I realized that actually there was commonalities amongst us, which were adaptability, resilience, and resourcefulness, because by the nature of actually who we were and how we were moving around. So I thought then it was a really good idea to set up a business, but I realized it wasn't going to be a charity because so many partners don't see themselves as a charity case, but actually a social business with a real social purpose. And that's 13 years later, that's where we are today.
Yeah, well, I'm just thinking about the timelines there. So very much in line with the Armed Forces Covenant, actually. So that came in under David Cameron way back in 2012. It had to go through Parliament, so a couple of years prior leading up to that. And equally, it was at a time when reservists and service personnel were in high demand with Iraq, Afghanistan, and numerous other commitments around that time. So it's really interesting that these almost this perfect storm that Recruit for Spouses was being set up. You were kind of fighting a good fight on the spouse and partner front, as well as government actually acknowledging that there is a case of people, service personnel, defence people, the wider community, being disadvantaged through service. You over the last decade, we've both been plugging away in our respective areas. What kind of changes have you seen?
So 2013, when we won the Prime Minister David Cameron's Big Society Award, there was definitely a resistance to change at that point. And it was just really from everybody. I think there was no awareness. People didn't really see it as a problem. I think for many, many years, people had seen that military spouses weren't, they were just in the background, and they didn't really have a voice. I think what we're seeing now through the Covenant, through really good charity work, that actually military spouses and families do have a real voice. And it's really great to see ministers, government saying armed forces and their families, because I think that is a very important piece. I think one of the tiny cuttings I found or I was given when we first started was from the First World War. And it said that they wanted the Toms, the wives and partners of the Toms, to do something like darning socks because it kept them busy. And I think even though back in those days, they believed that by the wife or the non-serving spouse working, they were distracted, they were focused, and they had something for themselves. And that's really what we're all about.
Yeah, I mean, for me, personal experience, we spoke about my wife earlier on, and the level of skill and talent that she can bring, and partners and spouses can bring to organisations, is very different to that of service personnel. And I referenced hitting the record button, an article that I read about a year ago on LinkedIn that was titled "Don't And Me," with the "and" in some speech marks. And it was all about this idea that when it comes to matters of employment and opportunities, don't just say veterans and spouses, veterans and partners. And actually the needs of a spouse and partner are very different. And the skill set that they bring is equally, it stands alone, and it shouldn't just be tied in, lumped in with a veterans program. So with that in mind, and I know you've mentioned a couple of skills that they bring, but if I could kind of pin you down to a few more tangible skills that they could bring to the workplace.
See, that's a really, really good point that you bring up. Thank you for saying that, because actually, a military spouse doesn't see herself as a charity case, as I said earlier. And actually, what are the commonalities? How can you know? They don't want to say be labelled as a spouse, or this is what we do. And to tag on that sort of a veterans program and families, you know, and spouses, it doesn't work like that. We're very unique and different. Now, just to give you kind of an indication, we measure now as part of our impact in our social enterprise, we measure our social impact indicators effectively. So we measure the productivity of our teams. So we have a team sitting, for example, with Virgin, and we measured their productivity without spouses in their teams. We then measured them after, and they had increased their productivity by 78% just by having military spouses. Now, you could say we could have just got anybody off the street outside and put them in the same, given them the same training, given them the same environment to work in, but actually what we found in that short study, and this is really, really interesting, that the community, the support that they give each other, so they will they watch each other's backs, the camaraderie, that the good sort of sense of humor, that the sort of willingness as community to kind of really stick together, so the culture is really, really strong. And I think particularly in these times, people kind of go, how do you get culture? Let's get table tennis, in the office. It's about how you behave in a job. It's how you behave, you know, you feel and what you believe in, I suppose, your real kind of values. So you've got these incredible sort of tangible assets. So, but the adaptability and the resilience, you know, kind of almost sugarcoat that as well. So you've got this amazing culture, this amazing community. And therefore, when you've got that, it's almost the perfect recipe for a really strong team. What you find with spouses as well is that when one when their serving partners are away, they'll really step up. So they step up their work. So they'll say, look, you know, this person is, you know, really struggling. She's got three children at home, just using the example. Three children at home, husband's been away for 9 months. Let's really support her. They don't go, oh, you know, Jane Jones hasn't done this or this. And that. Right, we'll pick up from her, you know, we'll support her. And then what this spouse will then do is give back more. And this is what we're seeing in clients and customers, is that they're really recognizing those unique assets and challenges, you know, that we, and actually one thing we're used to as resilient people, you can't say let's train resilience. Resilience comes from somewhere where you're sort of thinking, I really don't want to be here, this is really difficult. And so many spouses are put in that situation so often. And you and I were talking off camera before, and we were talking about your wife sees herself as herself, which is absolutely brilliant. Each spouse is unique, each situation is unique. So we try and sort of harbour that and harness that uniqueness in them. So each spouse's journey is very, very unique. So you're right, they don't fit really into pathways, and they don't fit into other add-ons. It's not what they do.
Yeah. Well, I mean, again, going back to that, I think you said it best when you said, you know, we're not a charity.
Yeah.
And I think maybe when they're tagged on, certainly, again, speaking from my wife's perspective, there's that imposter syndrome. Mm-hmm. You know, she wouldn't want to be seen as taking the job of someone else who maybe needed it more off the back of, you know, through some partner or spouse project. But in the same token, it's interesting there, actually. So I almost led that question as if there was going to be that unique skill set. But things that you've mentioned there, highlighting shared experience, adversity as well, you know, having a partner deployed for a period of time, there's always a risk that's associated with that deployment. And that's something that you have to live with as a spouse, and maybe something as a service personnel we have the benefit of maybe not having to deal with, should we say. So you have that. But then there's some other things you mentioned there about the loyalty, about that determination, about the adaptability and resilience. So there's a number of things that come through.
And I think one of the things that spouses are, they have an amazing ability to just get on with it. So serving partner goes away, they're away from their family, they're away from their normal network. It takes on average, it takes 2 years to build up a network of friends. They need to get their car MOT'd, they just do it. They need to get a tire fixed, they just get on with it. They need to fix something, they need to get the kids into the dentist, or they need to find a new doctor or a school. They just do it. They don't complain. And I think people may say they do, but they just have this amazing ability to just get things done.
Yeah.
And that is a wonderful asset. And I think what happens in when you see spouses that are employed in silo without other spouses around them, they become there's a real sense of overwhelm. So spouses have a lot of work put on them because they just get on. But it's when they have that environment of other spouses or an employer that really understands how they what they need, it's when you see that you get the best out of them.
So I'm going to just circle back to the case you referenced there around Virgin. You made an interesting point saying, well, you know, we could have contrasted that against any group of individuals coming in and whether or not they would have achieved that remarkable 78% uplift. Underemployment is definitely seen within service personnel, veterans, reservists. How is that reflected within spouses and partners? Because like you said, if they're going to get moved around with their partner every couple of years, if their address is on base, and you know, if they could have some disadvantage there. So do you think that actually there's some partners and spouses that have fantastic civilian qualifications, and potentially they could have had a fantastic career had it not been for their partner's career choice and them choosing to support that? How does underemployment affect the partner and spouse demographic?
That's another really good question, Tony. I think underemployment is an interesting one because I think there's a huge skills gap in the nation. You know, we're looking at a sort of situation where there is a massive skills gap. When it comes to underemployment, I think the typical, and I'm using a sort of a very general sweep here, but spouses often find themselves in a situation where they just need a job and they just want to get by. They just need an extra so much, £300, whatever, to go on holiday, or they want to do that. So they will subjugate. They will go under what they're qualified to do. I think they find it very humiliating, and I'm talking from the experience of thousands of spouses that we've helped into employment, is that they go to a job, they have maybe run a firm, you know, floor of managed, they've managed a floor, they've worked in a FTSE company. We've had the most incredibly, I've mostly felt very embarrassed actually at some of the skills that I see. They come to us or other charities because they think that they need to be understood. And I think when they're sat in front of people that don't quite understand their, you know, what they can give to a company.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of what we try and help the spouses to do is talk about one of the, we actually had a webinar this morning, was talk about what they can offer and how they can improve and talk about their life experiences. So we've moved four times in the last 5 years.
Mm.
You know, we can do this. So talk about these amazing skills. And what we try and encourage spouses to do is look, think about their perfect job, write it down, and then try and find that sort of employer that really wants to welcome them in and work with them and sort of work on that more than sort of what they're not able to do. And it's a lot of underemployment underpinned with confidence, lack of self-confidence, really.
Yeah, I think you've absolutely hit the nail on the head there. Again, I mean, if my wife does ever listen to this, she's going to be slapping me around the head. But exactly the same. She went from being an underwriter in Lloyd's to, you know, the checkouts in Asda.
Mm-hmm.
Now, obviously, that wasn't an ideal employment choice. But to her, financial independence, having a job,
yep.
You know, a sense of purpose, all of those things meant that that was that. But equally, when she was applying for jobs, there was that struggle because, you know, the CV showed one thing, whether it was qualification, education level, or gaps in CV, you know, that kind of thing. So if you, employers are hopefully listening to this, what advice could you give them around identifying, because again, a spouse partner wouldn't necessarily have a military CV. There wouldn't be anything on there that says, and maybe apart from an address, but there wouldn't be anything on there that identifies them as being defence people from the defence community. How would employers identify that partner and spouse?
I think it's, again, a lot of spouses, when if you go back to the day when you know, we were taking off that element in our CV. Spouses said, whatever you do, do not say you're military spouse. Do not open up. Mm. And even now, there are still challenges around that. But it's a lot better in that this DRM, the whole covenant, has really helped to raise awareness around you can't actually ask those kinds of questions. But actually, if employers are actively trying to employ spouses, it's all about understanding what they need. So geographically, you know, can they pick up the children? Are they able to sort of go home? I mean, I know a lot of companies are really steering now towards working in an office, which is great. And actually really good for spouses now as well that they go into an office. But it's understanding their unique challenges and understanding how they can best support them, because when they do support them, they're going to get a really invested employee and somebody who is going to stay. The first question they always say to us, yeah, but if I employ them in Salisbury for 2 years, they're going to move on in 2 years. And we say, so what? Because that then opens up the job for somebody else. And actually, people don't always stay that long in employment. Yeah. And actually, what you will find is if you really like him, her, then actually you may want to keep employed. She may move to Kinloss for a couple of years, but she may come back. Or they may decide to stay, buy a home nearby and stay. So actually, we're seeing a real shift of change for military families. And military families just want income. They want, you know, they want to be able to go on holiday.
Yeah.
They want to have a life like everybody else. And they just want, that, you know, a fair chance, crack at the whip. But as your wife, as you say, was an underwriter, so she's massively underemployed.
She's back in insurance now,
and
by the way.
She's back in insurance, which is great. But again, you know, there's so many spouses that are in that situation. And I think it's finding those, you know, people like your wife that people can help and support into the right job.
Yeah. Well, actually, recruit for spouses, correct me if I'm wrong, there's two arms.
Yeah.
And so we've spoken about the kind of employability recruitment side of things. But there's also the training arm.
Yes, we have a training. So we have two sides. We have the social enterprise, which is a B Corp accredited. Now, we took 2 years to get that accreditation, where they look through the governance, the stakeholders, the structure of the business, how we pay our employees, how we have as a result 52 policies now for our employees. We employ 59 people, so they really look under the bonnet of everything, which is very difficult. It took 2 years to do it, And then we've got the academy, which trains us, and it's very separate. So that is where any profit we make goes into the academy. So that, that upskills, that builds confidence. We're doing a lot with actresses and actors, and they come in and they talk to spouses about how they present themselves in an interview, mm-hmm. how they portray, you know, how do you talk about your life in a positive way? And we're looking at mindset. We're working with neuro-linguistic programs. A bit of a tongue-tie, that one.
Yeah. Neuro-linguistic. NLP. Everyone loves a TLA.
Yeah. So we're working with people that have experience in that, so they can help spouses to really articulate who they are and their messaging. So yeah, it's really exciting, and it's very, very busy. You know, we've run a webinar this morning, and that was busy full. So yeah, it's good. What we try and do is get so we had Emma Wiggs, who's a Paralympian. She's won 11 gold medals. We try and get people out of the military community to come in and talk about their experiences of adversity. So Emma Wiggs was paralysed as an 18-year-old woman. She was out in Australia. She was mowing the lawn, went to sleep with pins and needles, woke up, had no use of her arms and legs, but she now has use of her arms. But she talks very openly about disability and how, you know, comparison is the thief of joy. And she talks about how to measure success, really, and how to focus on being a success in your own life, whether that's just getting up and having a decent day with the kids, you know. And so she's talked to our spouses this morning, and that was great, and it was really well received. So she has no idea about the military, but I think that's quite a good thing, because we have to educate, and they go, oh, no idea about it. But, you know, it's really good to create awareness and draw attention to it's not just military spouses, it's other people that have been through difficult times as well and can help spouses to get to where they need to be.
I completely agree. I think when we look at inspirational speakers or people with great stories, we do ourselves a disservice if we limit ourselves to, you know, just people within our bubble,
yeah.
so to speak. Whilst there are some fantastic stories, I'm not going to take them away. Clearly, if you're listening, you're listening to this because you're interested in those stories. But actually, sport, for example, as you mentioned, Paralympics there, there are some fantastic stories where context is completely different, but the meaning behind it, in terms of the triumph over adversity, the soldiering on attitude, yeah. you know, that translates and resonates with our community just as much.
Resilience as well. I think resilience is something that, you know, people talk about. I've been in awe of so many military personnel that I've met over the years, and spouses as well, and some phenomenal stories, and I feel very privileged to work with them. Mm-hmm. But I think drawing it on other stories of resilience from the outer world and bringing that together, you see commonalities, you see the fact that they didn't give up, the fact that they had to focus on the positives. You know, Emma talks about the fact that she had to wake up with the reality that she would never walk down the aisle. Mm-hmm. And she said that as a young woman, that was quite a big deal. And we can all relate to that. We can also say, actually, that's really awful. And she said, how did I come through that? How did I work through that? And I think to share stories of spouses, and it's not an option to sort of say, oh, me too, it was horrible, but it's actually if she can do that, then I can aspire to live a better life as well.
Yeah, no, I think that there's that empathy and sympathy kind of rule where you emulate and take away as much as you can of the story and apply it to you in your own life and your own challenges. So talking about challenges, when we talk about the Armed Forces Covenant to Industry and the Employer Recognition Scheme awards, you know, military spouses and partners are very much part of that. They're integral to it. Indeed, they have their own section on the silver application form. Some of the things that we talk about are around working with our forces, family employment partners, working with the family federations. We talk about additional leave, you know, support during times of deployment, and also when there's times of R&R, because it could be that, you know, you need to take your holiday in line with your partner's holiday when they're back. And sadly, there's also a matter around compassionate leave. You know, if your partner's wounded or tragically killed in action, you know, additional leave around repatriation and support. Actually, post-COVID, there's been a resurgence in working from home and the ability to be flexible, and that ties into what we were saying about having, being moved around every 2 years. If you're working remotely, then that's perfect. And what other kind of things could employers do or think about doing differently in order to better service the spouse or partner community?
Well, firstly, thank you for asking me that question, because I think it's a really, really good question to ask. I think there's a lot that employers could do. I think employers under pressure, under the environmental social good, the skills gap, and they're like, what's in it for me? How can I support these families? And I think there's so many things that they can do, but I think the main thing is to understand the community. The community doesn't want, and I say community in a loose way, because as I said earlier, each is an individual in their own situation. They don't want charity, they don't want sympathy, they want understanding, and they want people to say, do you know what, I get this. So for example, if they have to move, within a 4 weeks notice, that they say, look, I'm moving and I have to move, whatever, to a different part, that they go, okay, that's understood. We, for example, give a day's leave extra per moving day. I think it's understanding the person, and you're employing that whole person. So bring, they have almost a mentor within the company. And I think that really helps if the spouse can have a mentor within that company that they can support them, encourage them. And also there's a lot around coaching and mentoring. We find that our coaching and mentoring is hugely in demand now, and it's taken years to really tweak that, and with, we're working towards this kind of world of AI and people almost doing everything online and everything, all those algorithms. At the end of the day, we're losing connection and we're losing that sort of that bond that we have with people. It's like, when I came in today, we had this great conversation. If we'd have done it online, we wouldn't have had such a great chat.
Yeah.
But I think it's really about when it comes to a spouse and employing a spouse, it's really understanding them, because when they do understand them and support them, and it's not just by giving them stuff, it's by understanding and just saying, what can I do to help? When at the moment with the Navy, you're seeing back-to-back tours, and we know so many military spouses that are working so hard. They're coming back from school runs, they're rushing back to get their kids in, and it's tough, it's really hard. So how are the children doing? Is it sports day? I'll let you get off earlier this afternoon. Look, I know you want to do that. Do you want to work from home tomorrow? And okay, you're a little bit late for the Zoom call. We get it. What can we do to support? And it's just how opening the ears and eyes. You were saying about repatriation and the awful stuff we saw in Afghanistan. But what we're seeing now are higher levels of mental health challenges within the military community. So it's kind of as much as they can do to understand and think and support. And I think they'll be going a long way to getting a good employee.
Definitely. Again, just linking it back to what we were saying about how you said about how you grow that community and that shared mindset. And one of the things I always think about is that shared experience, that lived experience. Some people might say shared trauma, my wife being one of them, living with me, as you can imagine. But I think, harking it back to what's happened over the last few years with COVID, the whole country has had some shared trauma, in the sense that we've had to live in isolation, we've been forced to work differently. Those with children that weren't at school for one reason, the homeschooling, balancing that with your own work, and so we've gone through that. And interestingly, there was a great article by a Submariner who said about how they, from a mental health perspective, how they kept busy during times of isolation whilst at sea. And I think the country has now had that shared experience. And things that you've mentioned there around, a bit of flexibility for home life, work-life balance, understanding individuals' needs, has really come to the forefront. And it may have been there in the past. It may have been slightly more box ticking, CSR motivated, and maybe not had the substance behind it. But I mean, from my experience now, I think over the 2 years of COVID and doing virtual meetings and having people's kids run through, or the dogs barking, or the cat's wagging its tail in front of the Zoom lens, that it's brought us all together. And I would like to think that employers have seen that flexibility to the positive, and they haven't seen it impact work output, So we now understand that actually, you know, if we're talking about retention, so we've mentioned recruitment, if we're talking about retention, retaining talent in a fiercely competitive market, having that degree of flexibility where, do you know, if you want to do the school run at 3 o'clock, but your projects are still getting over the line on time, then do the school run at 3 o'clock. Yeah. You know, it's, and again, linking it back to something you said earlier about that can-do attitude, you know, that fierce loyalty that you mentioned, that ties in quite nicely with that. You know, one, that's not a person you want to lose from an organisation, and two, it's a person you can trust. You know, trust them to manage their time, trust them to manage their workload. So for me, there's a key element there.
And you talk about retention, you know, with the armed forces, with the military, for example, the MOD, they're trying to retain and attract good people. And they have all these programs, but I think, you know, opening their eyes and ears as well to, you know, offering what they're doing with spouses, but actually to allow spouses to be their own people, I think is really important. Not saying this is what you will do, this is a program that will sort you out and help you out. They can't, it's not their job to help spouses into work.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they have enough on their plate. And I think there's some really good programs out there now and charities that are doing really, really good work. And I think it's kind of let them do that and support that and get behind those really good initiatives. Because as you said earlier, there's so many good charities doing really good work. And I think that's something to really be very sort of encouraging really as well.
Well, there's only one thing left for me to say, and that's thank you very much, Aleph, for your time today. And thank you for all of the work that you've done for the partner and spouse community over the last 13 years. I also can't go without mentioning the fact that you've been nominated for an award. Don't tell me this is news. The Women in Social Enterprise Award.
Yes, we were listed as one of the top 250 companies for a B Corp status, because it was really hard to get that. You have to go through all these kind of hoops to jump mm-hmm. through, and yeah, we were listed as one of the 250 top social enterprise companies. So yeah, it is a huge honour, and we're so pleased to be up there, but we've got to stay there.
Yeah,
that's the key. So yeah,
well, keep doing what you're doing, and I'm sure that you will.
Lovely, thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks for tuning in. You can find us on all your favourite podcasting platforms, including Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Anchor, and on YouTube. Also, don't forget to follow DRM on social media. All of the links can be found in the episode bio.